This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Welcome, boys and girls. Welcome to today's... What is this today? It's the 22nd, the third Sunday in October. Not quite Halloween, not quite November, not quite Election Day, which is something you should be getting yourself prepared for. But it's a fun and entertaining show on one of the most fun and entertaining weekends to be found in Charlottesville. Isn't that right, Richard?
I hope so.
We're going to be talking about Charlottesville's very own Virginia Film Festival here for the hour. A couple folks into the studio. One more soon to be racing in. Richard Herskowitz is here. Richard's official title, at least as I have it, Festival Director.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
We'll be talking with Richard about how the festival gets going and how things are chosen and interesting setups for the weekend to come. Paul Wagner is here. Paul is an Oscar and Emmy winning director here in the studio. Let's test his microphone. How are you?
Good morning, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for coming in. And racing into a chair here joining us, Andy, is it hers?
It is hers.
Like Hertz without the T.
Without the T.
All right. Andy, involved with what I personally find to be one of the more eye-catching, ear-catching shows from the upcoming festival, the Live from the Hook film. Is that correct?
That's it.
All right. And we'll be talking about that for those of you who are a touch older. Not that the younger folks wouldn't be interesting, because there's tunes and live music and everything else going along with that. But for those who might be alive a little older, who've been in Charlottesville for a little while, this film looking back on some of our more famous bands and musicians here in town. So we will be talking about the Virginia Film Festival. And let me take a moment and thank one of the underwriters who allows us to do such thing, Blue Ridge Graphics. Blue Ridge Graphics can be found at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. That number on page 739 of the Charlottesville Yellow Pages and at BlueRidgeGraphics.com, 296-9746. All right, let's get straight into it. The Virginia Film Festival, upcoming next weekend. I guess it starts Thursday night. Thursday night is the first incident.
That's right.
Richard, you're the festival director, so we'll hit up with you first.
Okay.
This is the 19th year?
19th.
How long have you been the festival director?
This is my 13th.
And so obviously you love what you do.
Yeah, I do. I mean, what makes it interesting is that the theme changes every year. So it's a completely different festival every year. Last year was Injustice. The year before that was Speed. And it really does feel completely different to me. I mean, and also, you know, the opportunity to mix classics and premieres, that's unusual for film festivals. So, yeah, I like it here.
All right, this year's theme. And we'll start with some of the basic questions. I think if you have... If you've picked up the festival guide, which I'm holding here in my hands, the official guide to the 19th Annual Virginia Film Festival, you know what the theme is, Revelations. I'm curious as to, you know, where the theme comes from and how it manages to cover. How many films are you going to have over this 4-day?
Well, including shorts, it's something like 60 to 70 films and over 100 speakers.
I'm curious as to how you have a theme such as Revelations, mm-hmm. where that comes from, who mm-hmm. comes up with it, mm-hmm. or how a group comes up with it, if that's the case. And then you work in 60 different films under its umbrella.
Yeah. Well, actually, the theme has been suggested over the years to me, and this year, the person who suggested is sitting right next to me, Paul Wagner, and he just got me at the right weak moment, I guess. And I mean, I've been shying away from it because it seemed too big at some point. It seemed potentially too contentious, but this year it just felt right. First of all, I realized Paul was doing a film about religion and society, and then another filmmaker in Charlottesville, Kent Williamson, was making a film with a documentary about religion. And then I found out quickly the films were coming along, like Jesus Camp, Iraq in Fragments, and it's just become a major topic of public debate. The rise of fundamentalisms, the tensions between religious and secular culture, so that there was going to be a lot of great new films to show on the topic. That was the first thing. And then it was going to be an opportunity to show some just classic great movies like Tender Mercies, The Seventh Seal, that religion, you know, and spirituality are just an inspiration to a lot of terrific filmmaking historically. So we went ahead with it. But at that point, I start really soliciting input from everywhere I can get it. I mean, there are students, there are faculty, there are people in the community, there are other film programmers who make suggestions. The word gets out what the theme is. And I spend about 7 or 8 months just considering possibilities. Okay.
Hey, Paul, so you came up with you're being attributed as the person to come
right.
up with
right.
With
told
the theme.
Richard, if this thing is a flop, I'm not taking the blame.
Yes,
I will, of course, take credit.
I had a feeling that's how it might be. That's why I was choosing my words carefully. Is this because... I've had you on the show before a couple times, so I'm not going to assume that you suggested this because it was going to provide a lot of publicity for your film.
But, I'm glad you wouldn't attribute such a self-centered motive to me, Rick.
But I would think that because it was fresh in your mind at the time.
Oh, no question.
So I'm curious as to...
Yeah, well, first of all, don't underestimate...
There's other ways to do that, though, aren't there?
Right. Don't underestimate my ability to self-promote, Rick. So, yes, it was on my mind in terms of a specific project, but there were a lot of connections for me, you know, starting at sort of the personal level. You hit your 50s, you know, you start thinking about eternal issues, maybe. A lot of us do. I had been working for a number of years with the Center on Religion and Democracy, which is a sort of a think tank at UVA that deals with issues about the role of religion in society in very broad terms, not constitutional issues, not separation of church and state kinds of things, but just broader issues about public morality or morality in the public sphere. Post 9/11 Islam, you know, internationally, just the whole effect of religion is a huge factor. And as Richard pointed out, I wasn't alone in this. There are other filmmakers, there are other writers exploring this issue of religion at personal levels, but also at broader social levels. And so it just seemed like something that might click as a festival subject. The other thing was that I think Richard had success the previous year with justice and injustice as a theme because it plugged into a lot of local constituencies and organizations and people. And I thought, well, gee, religion is a natural for that, you know, with the church community, the faith-based community organizations that are working for social justice. So it just seemed like there would be a number of ways to come at it. And, you know, I've known Richard for a number of years. I could sense that maybe he would be a little nervous about the subject, but I just knew that he would do a great job with it if he committed himself to it. And he has. I mean, the schedule's really amazing. And you know, I hope it is contentious. I hope there is a lot of debate about it. It's something that needs to be talked about in our society, and film is a great way to stimulate that.
We are here with a lot of folks from the Virginia Film Festival. Richard Herskowitz, the festival director, Paul Wagner, and Andy Hurst, both involved with their own films to be shown in the upcoming weekend. Richard, you have a very... interesting and entertaining opening. I think you call it a confession at the front of the official guide.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple really interesting questions out of that. I'd like each one to start with you, mm-hmm. and then certainly Andy and Paul can jump in for their own feedback when they feel it's appropriate, because I don't want these two guys to get lost in the first little part of the show. You're talking about whether or not you would be comfortable doing something with this theme. And you say that we are in the midst of a religious movie explosion. In fact, I believe the phrase you used is Godsploitation.
Well, that's wasn't my phrase, but it was a phrase used to describe what may be going on with the movie companies like Fox forming a branch, Fox Faith. I mentioned about the Ten Commandments when it was such a big hit in its ABC television series. There was a big two-page ad in Variety that said, "Thou shalt not question the power of Moses to command greater ratings." You know, so yeah, there somebody called this Godsploitation. I think it's a valid phrase.
But what was the part that that made you a little uncomfortable? You know, Paul mentioned it. When he talked about sending over his suggestion, what made you uncomfortable about the possibility of using this as a theme?
Maybe partly just knowing how contentious this was going to be. That was part of it. Maybe knowing that religious movies, when I think I confessed that at the very beginning, it's not my particularly favorite genre of filmmaking. Although when I thought about it a lot more, I realized that, that, like I said, films that are spiritual, films made in what's called a transcendental style by directors like Tarkovsky and Bresson and Dreyer, are among my favorite movies. So, yeah, I think that's part of it.
Paul and Andy, I'm curious as to how each of your films fall into this, because, Paul, your topic, and I'm going to let you go second, because your topic, anyway, seems to fit a little more. Andy, how does the movie... Go ahead, Richard.
Well, I was just going to say that Andy may not even know that the film festival isn't completely entirely about its theme. And Live from the Hook is one of the films that isn't, central to the theme itself. Although, arguably, one of the things we said about it is that really it's about musicians who make music from their soul rather than from the bottom line or for the bottom line, and there's a connection there. But I admit it's a tangential one. The festival is also a celebration of the arts of Charlottesville, and that's how I feel like his film fits in. But if he sees another connection, I'm looking forward to hearing it.
I'll give you the other connection. Having gone to see Captain Toons last night at Star Hill play for the first time in 30 years.
And I can tell from your voice that you were cheering loudly for the band.
Sunday morning is good for rock and roll. I see an awful lot of people who came of age listening to the live music that was everywhere in Charlottesville in the 70s and 80s. And maybe they're not finding revelations, but they find inspiration. Many of us found creative inspiration that lasted the rest of our lives from the music we saw and the musicians we got to know. And as Richard said, I find a tremendous amount of spirituality in the fact that there are dozens of musicians in this town who have been playing live, who've been forming groups and collaborating for decades just because they have the passion for that music, and that's where they find their inspiration, and they've inspired a generation of folks who've come through this town in a lot of ways.
You know, that's one of the more soulful answers that I think we could have gotten for that. Paul, now your film, I feel like I'm kind of jumping all over the place here, but that's...
Feel
That's
free.
Why I'm an abstract artist, because I have no real theme of my own. Richard mentions the difference between spiritual and uplifting in his opening. I'm curious as to how that applies to your film. Let me back up. Tell people what your film is about.
Sure, sure. First, before I do that, Rick, can I make a connection on Andy's film, which I have not seen, by the way, except for a couple of little clips. But just this, and to relate it to the larger theme, part of what was in my mind when I emailed Richard about this was, just broadly in society, people are more concerned about issues like authenticity, integrity. A lot of us feel like, whether we're members of organized religions or not, a lot of us feel like that contemporary society has become too materialistic, too commercialized, and that a sense of, truth and genuine beauty and authenticity in our lives is lacking. And a lot of, I think that's the source of a lot of these impulses. Some people play it out by getting back to a religion they grew up with. Other people get back to a music they grew up with that they associate with a particular time in their life. But all of it has a similar, a related sort of source, I think, in our individual lives, and that plays itself out in social movements and social directions. So I do think there's a genuine connection between the film and the theme. For my film, as I mentioned earlier, it specifically grew out of some work I'm doing with the Center on Religion and Democracy at UVA. I had a long-standing interest in gospel music. I mean, I just loved it as a form of music. And but knew it as something that, while I tapped into personally, it didn't have a lot of connection with my, white guy suburban background. And I was sort of curious about what that was about and trying to learn more about where gospel music comes from. And, of course, where it comes from is, a longstanding history in the black community. And now, in some ways, the place to find that is in the inner city black community. There's been a large suburbanization of the black population in this country, but there still is a black population in the inner city for which gospel music has a huge connection to the values of that community. So what I did is, one Sunday morning, went to a church service in Washington, D.C., and that was attended by me and 300 African-American drug addicts. People who had years of experience with heroin and crack cocaine, and who were struggling to overcome those addictions, in the case of the service, through their relationship with God. And a lot of that, of course, is embodied in the music. I was totally blown away by the whole experience of the service, by the music, which is incredible. And, like any documentary filmmaker, you go, oh my God, there's a film here that I feel personally connected to, even with, all the caveats, white guy, suburban background, this is not my world. But, that's part of being the role of the documentary filmmaker. You're an explorer. You're always out there sort of looking for a new world to investigate that's appealing because it isn't your world. And so this is what I found there and how I sort of determined to make a film about it.
All right. 11:19 here on the Wake Up Call. Andy Herz, Paul Wagner, Richard Herskowitz, all involved with the upcoming Virginia Film Festival. You're welcome to dial us up and ask a question or make a comment if you'd like. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you like to use the toll-free line because you're living out of town and you got a question about the upcoming film festival, I'm sure Richard knows everything after 13 years of running everything, being the man in charge. Let me take a moment and let you know the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Increasing clouds and a chance of showers today. Highs 55 to 60. Partly cloudy with a chance of scattered rain tonight. Lows 35 to 40. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Staying chilly. Highs 55 to 60. And just upper 40s in the valley. Right now, there's clouds everywhere. In the valley, it's 55, a little rain even, and 45 in Lynchburg, cloudy in Richmond at 53, and mostly cloudy in Charlottesville at 51.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. For campus, town, or mountain trails, you can choose from brands like Patagonia, Mountain Hardwear, and The North Face for outerwear and over 170 styles of footwear. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen in Richmond and at BRMS.com. And the station wants to remind those of you who made pledges to the recent fund drive but who haven't paid them to please do so as soon as possible. People who can take your payment and help you with your premiums are here until 7 p.m. on weekdays and sometimes later. And on weekends, if you call first, we're at 2250 Old Ivy Road in Charlottesville behind the Ivy Inn restaurant. The zip code is 22903 if you're mailing in your pledge. Our first round of written reminders has gone out to those with unpaid pledges. And those thanks again to those who have already honored their pledges to help us reach 93% collection rate on the $82,000 pledged. All right, back in action with the gentleman in the room. Richard, quick question. I realize I said gentleman in the room. What's sort of the, you got 60 films and short documentaries. What's the sort of percentage between male filmmakers and producers versus female? I mean, do you always make a sense? And this actually, to me, also applies to the religious aspect. Mm-hmm. If you have a religious theme, mm-hmm. I'm curious as to the male-female percentage rate. Do you have films that are sort of girly or feminist or somehow, you know, mostly going to attract the women? And if you're going to do a show on a religious theme, did you make a careful thinking to cover all religions or all major religions and have them involved.
Yeah. You know, I try not to be a kind of a quota-oriented programmer. I mean, I'm very conscious that I want the programming to be as broad and representative as possible to reach as many audiences as possible. Same time, I don't have like a checklist in my mind. Okay, I've gotten a black film, I've gotten a gay film, I've gotten, you know, and I'm done with that category. I mean, I really have to be able to stand behind the film and really feel like it's worth showing. And if there is a category and I just cannot, you know, cannot find a good film to fit it, I'm not going to plug something in. Anyway, so, but I am very conscious of having this broad variety and to reach as many audiences as possible. I mean, I see my role as a gatekeeper, really, as a programmer. The program isn't just a reflection of me. It's meant for the largest community. Okay, that's what I'm aspiring to. But, anyway, in terms of women, actually, I have noticed that last year the featured guests, the actors were Vanessa Redgrave, Kathy Baker, and Sissy Spacek. This year, it's Robert Duvall, Morgan Freeman, and Liev Schreiber. You know, maybe that things tilted a little more male direction this year. But in terms of the programmers and the feminist films, the guest filmmakers, there are quite a few women-directed films in the program. There's a documentarian named Lisa Lehman who is coming, who's made a film about Jews and intermarriage. There's a program on Friday morning called Keep Not Silent and In My Father's Church by a Jewish lesbian filmmaker and a Methodist lesbian filmmaker. They're combined in that same program about the tensions between their lesbian identities and their strong religious faith. There's more, I think. It's a good question. So I'm curious if people feel like there's imbalances.
Because we're talking about revelations, and I know that you can look under, probably pull it out of your dictionary and look that it has, you know, definition 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But I think in this case, it's meant to be, or it's at least coming across as being a religious aspect.
In terms of the variety of religions, then, is that what you're asking?
Did you have a checklist for that?
I guess I
can
did
see
to
where
a
you wouldn't
extent.
Want to make sure that you had a weak film because it was made by, a certain gender or genre, et cetera. But in this case,
I did notice, about a month and a half ago that there was, there wasn't much on the Hindu religion in the film, and actually, I was beginning to run into a lot of trouble. The Bollywood distributors are used to getting their films to theaters on the Bollywood circuit, and they would not return my calls. I could not get a film here, even though there were a few of those on Hinduism that I thought were really worth showing. I just couldn't get. And then I ran into trouble because I wanted a show, which I ended up getting, Satyajit Rai's film Devi, the Goddess, which is just fantastic film that had been I wanted to show from the start, but you can't imagine how much trouble it was to get that film. It's not in distribution in the United States, and anyway, but I did get it. So I went to a lot of trouble to make sure. But ultimately, there's only that one Hindu film in the whole program. There's more on Buddhism. There's more on Judaism, on Islam. Maybe not a, you know. I think there's a good variety, but again, I'm curious to hear other people's responses.
All right, we do have Richard Herskowitz here in the studio talking about the Virginia Film Festival, but we also have Paul Wagner, who's an Oscar and Emmy-winning director, and Andy Hirst. Andy, you're involved, as we mentioned, in the documentary, correct?
Correct.
Live from the Hook. How did you get involved in film in general? Is that your current profession, or did you just go, gosh, you know, this needs to be done, and I'm going to do this?
A little bit of both. I'm an entertainment attorney and represent a number of films, much of which really stemmed from my experiences here in Charlottesville. I learned almost everything I know about music from people like Bob Gerard and Charlie Pasterfield and the music that they introduced us to, and ranging from roots rock to old blues to swing to reggae and calypso. And I became involved with the folks who did the movie The Harder They Come, who I've worked with for about 10 years now, and have associate produced a number of films. But I had a moment very, very much like Paul's moment. Came down here on January 28th for the opening of a good friend's club, a smokehouse and nightclub out in Crozet called Uncle Charlie's. And Charlie Mayer was having this gathering of the tribe, of folks who've been around but lately been away from Charlottesville over the last 20 years. And I'm standing in front of the band, which is now called the Gladstones, with Bob Gerard singing and Charlie Pasterfield playing guitar and Tim Anderson playing and Jim Ralston on drums. And, Bob as Johnny Sportcoat and Charlie Pasterfield from Skip Castro were the people that my generation grew up with, and just before us, they were in a band called Captain Tunes. And it struck me that, on the one hand, those two guys, they were very big bands. Skip Castro and the Casuals toured up and down the East Coast. They had a number of records that sold well. They had many fans, and they came extremely close to breaking national, but they didn't quite. They never won American Idol. They didn't top the charts, but they're still up there. You know, 30 years later, they are still up there playing. They sounded better than they had ever sounded, certainly better than I sound this morning. Mm-hmm. And they, they still had the same incredible passion, and that really moved me. And then I looked around and I saw that there were people who had traveled from all across the country who do this on a fairly regular basis, come back to Charlottesville because of the connection that they have with the special time of music in the 70s and 80s here, and those musicians moves them still. And many of them, their careers have been shaped, and the way they spend their lives has been shaped by that love for music. And I had that same kind of moment that Paul did. I said, oh, my God, this is a really meaningful story that has never been told and should be told, and this is the movie I want to make.
So, you know, silly question, but how did you make it? I mean, if your background is the legal aspect of filmmaking, if you're talking about guys who have been musicians for 30 years or more, how did you actually get it made? I mean, where does the money come from for a film about musicians who've been in the business for 30 years and who never became famous, you know, other than, and I'm not trying to be mean, because I came to Charlottesville in 82, so the guys were still here playing, and the names and the band names are familiar to me, but who they were college towns where they were most famous. I'm assuming that they didn't play at CBGB in New York City or you know, some of the other places. Who gives you the money for this? Where do you get the talent for this? How do you convince other people to say, yeah, make a film about me, even though I didn't go national, and sort of, and have this at least one line in it, one, you know, theme across it, which is how we didn't become famous?
Well, I think the through line is not how we didn't become famous. I think the through line is that we are still playing all these years later because we have the passion to play, and the people who grew up with us share that passion. And the way it all happened is it's a classic labor of love. I started talking to a number of friends who were still in town, some filmmakers, my director of photography up in New York, a friend of mine who is out in L.A. who works on Grey's Anatomy, asked him to be the director. And what happened more than anything else is that people said, you know, this is important to me. These people are important to me. The music is important to me. And I will throw my time, my energy into it. And it became, you know, sort of a field of dreams thing. If you build it, they will come. So we started filming on, classic credit card, and did a trailer, did our first trailer, started to show the first trailer, and people started to say, you know what? Okay, I'll put $5,000, I'll put $10,000, I'll put $20,000 into this because this is important to me. It's important to Charlottesville. It's important to document how these musicians have worked together in a collaborative, non-competitive, not commoditized way, and how important that music really is and what they taught a generation of folks here.
We are talking about the Virginia Film Festival. Andy Herz is currently feeding back my questions in regards to his film, Live from the Hook, which is going to be Saturday night,
8 p.m. at the Paramount, with a concert that will follow, sort of illustrating the whole theme of the film, The Casuals, featuring Johnny Sportcoat, are reuniting, some of them coming back from Seattle, and they'll do a set, and after that we are going to have a jam of other all-star Charlottesville musicians, including Terry Allard, Stoned Wheat Things, Ham and Eggs, Skip Castro Band, and the Charlottesville Blues All-Stars.
We want to thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for allowing us to be on the air this hour and talking about the Virginia Film Festival. They are Seville Reader's Choice for burgers. Five Guys serves America's Standard, fresh and handmade, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Berwick Road Shopping Center. They're in the Hollymead Town Center and now on the Downtown Mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's FIVE guys.com. Andy, how do you put this together? I mean, I know that Richard has his hands full putting 60 films together. I'm sure he didn't say, oh, well, hold on, I'll be glad to get you the Paramount and get all the band members together and put all this. I would think that getting the film complete and having Richard say, yeah, we'll put this in the program is one thing, but then to actually, you know, you really took on a challenge here when you completed a film, got it in the festival, put together a music event afterwards. My gosh.
Well, the first thing I have to say is that Richard has been just incredibly supportive. And when we first told him about the project, that it was a homegrown project, that it featured the local scene and that it was being made by folks in Charlottesville, about Charlottesville, he was gracious enough to put us in and has been so supportive. And without that support, this film would probably not exist. And so I can't say thank you enough for that. The rest of it, how does it all happen? Well, it's actually kind of hard to imagine, but it has to do with there being an army, a small army of people in this town who have been making music or doing the sound for music, or being roadies for music, who said, you know what, we want to help you put together this concert. Chris Munson at 20 South Productions, who's going to be helping in other ways, I think, with the festival, has been instrumental and vocal in making it happen. He's put in a lot of hours and talked to all the musicians and Charlie Pasterfield and Bob Gerard, who from the beginning were the sort of core of the local music scene, they talked to all the folks in town and helped coordinate the event. So it's a true labor of love with a lot of people who wanted to see it happen.
And, Richard, I don't want to, you know, knock aside any other films. Especially Paul, I'm waving at you because that's not the goal. But it seems like this particular film has gotten an awful lot of publicity in for the festival. And I don't mean that in a way like at the slight of others, because, you know, you have some pretty A-list celebrities coming.
I feel great about that. I mean, I always get worried that the celebrities are going to overwhelm everything else. I mean, the program, there's a couple of things. I mean, I really want it to be a wide-ranging program of documentaries and experimental films and classics. And when the media only pays attention to the big stars, it's frustrating to me. So I'm really glad that that's not happening. And the second thing, besides looking at the great local films, the great alternative films we're showing, is this emphasis on the arts of Charlottesville. I think that more and more in recent years, we've become more of a multi-arts festival, not just a film festival. And having art exhibitions happening during the film festival, like this year, we have this amazing video installation, Passage, by Shirin Nishat, that's at 2nd Street, and an exhibition on Aboriginal art and spirituality that's at the Clugiroo Museum. And then this visiting video game artist, Ido Stern, who's here in conjunction with the UVA Art Museum's show, Complicit. Anyway, that's the art side. The music side includes live music accompanying the silent films we're showing on Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon at the Paramount. Andy's film, Live from the Hook, which is the biggest music event of the weekend. And then also another film is beginning to get more attention, and people are going to be reading about more during this week, called Before the Music Dies, which is about the homogenization of popular music, the music labels, and how it's being fought by music fans on the internet, as well as alternative labels. And there's a particular emphasis on ATO Records and Charlottesville. Chris Tetzeli of ATO Records and Bruce Floor of ATO Records, who live in Charlottesville, are in that movie. Anyway, that's another music film. Has nothing to do with the film, but is part with the theme, but has or is really part of this kind of multi-arts celebration that I think the film festival is.
By the way, you're gonna want to keep listening to NRN all week, because the station has passes to give away to the film festival, and we'll be doing so throughout the week upcoming. I believe that producer's passes. Richard, what is a producer's pass?
I'm not sure what passes our publicist brought here, but probably it's either an all-access pass to every event, including the opening night gala, which is already oversold out, and to every screening. There's also screening passes that are good to the regular priced events. I believe that during the week we're also going to be sending over passes for the film I just mentioned, Before the Music Dies, and possibly a few for Live from the Hook, although that is very close to selling out.
So you want to keep listening to NRN, because aside from you know, us telling you all the cool things that you should be seeing anyway, if you want to pick up a ticket, and tickets are still available to, you know, a variety of films and documentaries, et cetera, you know, you can win some for free right here from WNRN. All right, 11:40, we will be right back with Andy, Paul, and Richard.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, Charlottesville Republican Rob Schilling has moved from outspoken city councilor to soft-spoken radio host. The Hook takes a look. If a school board already has the dubious distinction of receiving a Freedom of Information complaint in 2003 and a Muzzle Award in 2004, should they summarize meeting notes by leaving out names and other details? Well, Albemarle County thinks so. And the cover story looks at a famous 19th century area couple whose tale includes love, money, and a dead body. The Hook. No purchase necessary. And support all day, also coming from the Ivy Inn, a tradition of elegant fine dining on Old Ivy Road in Charlottesville. The Ivy Inn serves dinner Monday through Saturday from 5 until 9. Reservations recommended. More is at ivyinnrestaurant.com. And not that you're going to go anywhere, but at noon, George Bell. In fact, he's already here, but we'll tune him up for Les Temps Perdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Foreigner, Milli Vanilli, or Motley Crue. But you will hear X, Screaming Trees, and Hole. And requests are always welcome. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right, Richard Herskowitz, Paul Wagner, Andy Herz here talking about the film festival this week, starting on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we skimmed over the part that the goal was not to put too much emphasis on the big celebrities, but toss them out. Let's take 30 seconds and say who's coming. Because that's a lot of effort.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you're not in New York, Chicago, or L.A.
That's true. That does make it difficult to get stars to come here. And the festival has this track record and this the expectation based on from the very beginning. I think the first year the guests were Jimmy Stewart and Gregory Peck, and in later years Sidney Poitier, Anthony Hopkins, Sandra Bullock, on and on every year. And it's unusual for regional film festivals to get stars of that caliber. And it is kind of a burden and a scary one every year because people expect that we're going to continue with that track record. And actually, as of September 8th, the day our preview guide went to the printer, we did not have Robert Duvall or Morgan Freeman or Liev Schreiber. Not that we hadn't been trying. There's always a lot of balls in the air. It's like a feature film that goes into production where they're hoping to have headliners and. But what happened this year was just unbelievable. September 8th, the call came in that Robert Duvall was available and was honored to be asked to receive the Virginia Film Award. And a few days after that, Liev Schreiber's assistant called and said that he'd love to come to show Everything is Illuminated. And then about a week and a half after that came Morgan Freeman. I think our secret is that we ask, well, there's two things. One is that we have a very well-connected board, advisory board of people, mostly in Los Angeles, who have passionate about the film festival and help us get access to these people. But the other thing is that we generally ask the stars to come and show movies they really care about, not just come and promote their latest vehicle. You know, in the case of Robert Duvall, we said, "Come show The Apostle." This is the film that he wrote, he directed, he starred in, and we told him about the Paramount and what a spectacular screening space that would be for it. So I think that helped attract him. In the case of Morgan Freeman, this film that he's coming to show, 10 Items or Less, is a film that he produced. He stars in it, and it's a real stretch for him. I think after being in a lot of blockbusters, being in this low-budget independent film in which he gets to play a comedy performance. He's on the screen every minute, and he's really loosening up like I haven't seen him do in years. And you could tell he really cares about this performance. So, again, that helped that we asked him to do that. Liev Schreiber, we didn't ask him to come and show a film that he starred in, like The Omen, which he starred in last summer, and you could say that related to the theme. We asked him to show Everything is Illuminated, which is a film he wrote, he adapted himself from the novel and directed. So, you see, I think that's that helped us, and we were pretty overwhelmed by all this response this year.
Very cool. I have to say that I am continually impressed every year about the variety of not just A-list guests, because, I mean, there's always people who, you know, it's kind of like having a live DVD thing on some films mm-hmm. where you get to hear people who were deeply involved in the film talk about exactly what they did, yeah. You know, with the talks after the screening.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, but because also it is like the DVD commentary, except that the commentator also gets to hear the audience, which mm-hmm. they don't do on the DVDs, and that reputation has gone out, that the quality of discussion here right. is unusually strong, and the guests who come really feel like they by being here in Charlottesville and coming to this festival, they really recharge their batteries. They get back in touch with why they make movies. So that has helped us attract people.
Paul, you know, we've been talking about, we've been sort of been flying all over the place here, because that's what I'm good at. Here on the Wake Up Call, by the way, 11:46, talking about the upcoming Virginia Film Festival. Starts Thursday night, goes through Sunday. Wide variety of films, documentaries, screening areas from the downtown Regal Cinema, correct? To the Paramount, where
Vinegar
else?
Hill.
Vinegar Hill.
And Newcomb Theater at Newcomb Hall.
And, Paul, one of the things that I meant to ask earlier on, and this applies to Andy as well, is why a documentary? Because it seems, I think we're all familiar with a couple that have made big news and money in the last year or two. But overall, these are not money makers. It seems that those must come from the personal interest and from the heart. And I'm curious as to why and how you get these people to let you in.
Well, first of all, yeah, I think you're right. Documentaries, there's been a surge over the last few years in the public's interest in documentaries. And, you know, it might be related to what we were talking about earlier about this sort of broader desire for authenticity, you know, that somehow, you know, all the special effects and everything, as wonderful as they are, there are still audiences out there that want a more authentic experience. They want to engage with the world in a more sort of direct way, and documentaries afford that experience. Many of these documentaries, the films that I work on, the film that Andy has produced now, as he said, these are labors of love. They're made because people feel passionately about the subject matter.
But how do you live off of that? And again, you know, Richard made it very clear earlier. You don't get the A celebrities, you don't get the best films, you don't get the best people if the focus is on the bottom line.
Right, right. Well,
but Charlottesville ain't a cheap place to live.
Yeah. I think the combination for a lot of filmmakers is to do some commercial work that sort of does the bread and butter, and then to, you know, direct your passions into the subject matter that you really care about. And if you look around at the really successful documentary films, those are the ones that people are passionate about. And what happens is you find out that they're not the only ones who are passionate about those subjects. That's why they connect with audiences. But in their lives, in their working lives, they have to combine, you know, sort of the bread and butter work that they do for a television network or for a corporate client with the subject matter that they really care passionately about. And I think those are the films that end up in the film festivals and get maybe theatrical release and sell, but really connect with audiences because they're passionately made.
I think that that's the vision ultimately for our film, too. It's not very likely that the film in and of itself is going to make anybody tremendously rich. However, the film has served as a sort of a touchstone for first 50 people, then several hundred people, and now a couple thousand people. And at the end of the day, I believe when we're done touring the film, as we hope to do, up and down the East Coast and to a lot of the towns where there are alumni of UVA and the other schools where Bob and Charlie and in their various bands were extremely popular, I believe we are going to pull together quite a large number of people who would love to buy the music again, who would be thrilled to go see some of these bands and some of the more recent Charlottesville bands again. And I think it's sort of like doing an internet community of interest thing. I do believe there's actually a long-term positive bottom line here that will come out of what starts as a labor of love.
Well, Andy, I can see and see very easily how the music community would come together for this, and it's really sort of independent from your level of attachment, whether you were a musician, whether you or just someone who recognizes the name and went to some shows. Paul, your documentary, you're focusing on it's I don't know.
You can say it, Rick.
It's well, you know, they got, what do they have when, you know, the come on.
Are you asking about the film itself or?
Yeah. But you know, when you do that here, I just want to know what that would have to do.
I don't follow you, Rick.
Well, I'm just, it doesn't make any sense for me that your church mm-hmm. would make you think that that would be okay.
You mean to make a film about
yes.
that subject?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I mean, I'm passionate about the music. I'm passionate about taking the experiences of these people, which are unique, and letting a broader audience see and understand them. I mean, you know, most of us, our experience of the inner city is the 11 o'clock news, you know, and the stereotypes about welfare mothers and drug addicts and teenagers who get their girlfriends pregnant. But once you meet those people, and that's what happens in our film, is instead of just dealing with stereotypes and talking about them as, quote, social problems, you meet the people, you meet the individuals. And as soon as you do, you have a totally different perspective on quote, those people and those issues. And it is that you start responding to their humanity and their lives as human beings, and you start relating to them and understanding that they deal at certain fundamental issues with the same things that you deal with. And to me, in terms of dealing with these social problems, that's the best way to start, is to have respect for the people who are experiencing these problems. And then you're much more motivated as an individual to do something about those problems, rather than just in the abstract saying, oh, we've got to solve the problems of the inner city.
And folks who you were who you had with you, they did not have a problem with you putting them, putting them on the film?
Right. You mean like talking about their drug addiction or their sexuality and those kinds of interesting
sure.
subjects. You know what? This is the miracle of documentary filmmaking. You know, you're always at some level surprised, maybe even shocked at what people will say in front of a camera. But one of the things we found out is if you get someone willing to talk about their spiritual life, they will talk to you about anything, because nothing is more fundamental to their existence as a human being than their spiritual life. And so if they're willing to talk about that, they're going to go anywhere. They're going to talk about their sex life. They're going to talk about their drug habits. They're going to talk about their intimate relationships with their lovers and spouses. And so that's one of the exciting things about the film that we made, is that didn't actually occur to me as I went into it. Because, you know, let's face it, you sort of have the same perspective you're articulating there, that, gee, it's going to be tough to get people to talk about this subject matter. But in fact, it isn't, because as soon as a person's willing to talk about their spiritual life, they're talking about everything.
Yeah, I mean, that would be hard for me to, you know, to guess. And so I'm always just curious as to when you have that sort of issue and finding people who will put their face out for everyone to see and start talking about the things that they've done wrong, the things that they've done illegal, while someone sitting behind the camera going, okay, tell me more.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, there's a whole body of thought about the relationship of the documentary filmmaker with their subject. And it's a complicated relationship. And there are serious ethical issues that have to be dealt with when you go into a situation like that, in terms of the way you film the person and also the way the material is edited. When you're sitting in the editing room, we're working with hundreds of hours of footage that are going to be, you know, boiled down to 1 hour, or in the case of our film, almost an hour and a half. And there's sort of an ethical responsibility to fairly, honestly, and caringly depict the life of that person. I hope we've done that. I mean, I think that's the source of a lot of controversy in documentary filmmaking, is, you know, how fairly have those lives been depicted by the filmmaker?
How do you keep, by the way, I don't even know that it's called the God of a Second Chance.
Right.
I'm curious as to how you let it or don't let it affect you.
You mean in terms of the subject matter or my feelings about it?
Well, when you hear other people talking about this and their thoughts about the religious aspect, You know, do you go in sort of with your only thinking of it from the professional aspect, or do you let your personal emotional aspect be changed a little bit by this?
Right. Well, look, yes, there are sort of professional standards in some sense, but one of the interesting features about independent documentary filmmaking is you're not exactly tied to the same body of understandings that you do if you're a journalist. In other words, in terms of your relationship with the subjects or the subject, the way you treat the subject matter. And so it's a little bit more like the Wild West. Different filmmakers will approach the subject and the people they're working with in different ways. My bottom line is, do I feel that, I mean, I just feel like I have an ethical responsibility and a personal relationship with the people who are in front of the camera, and I'm not going to screw them. Even though, believe me, you can. Documentary filmmakers have incredible power, much more power than the people who are in the films realize, I think. But you just have an ethical responsibility to kind of not take advantage of that, I feel, and, you know, destroy a person's life. Even though you also have a responsibility to deal honestly with it. And I think if people come to see The God of a Second Chance, it's an issue that would be a great topic for conversation following it, because we're very open about these people's lives. They're open, and we're very open about what we say about them. And you're right, some of it's hardly flattering, and it's not triumphant in terms of, it's not a feel-good story in any way. So I hope that's something that gets discussed.
And when is when's your film?
Well, tragically, we're on opposite Live from the Hook. The good news is both films, we're sold out and they're about to sell out, so it's not a problem.
Right.
In fact, I'm going to go see my film at 7. It's at the Regal Cinema downtown on the mall at 7 o'clock on Saturday, and then I'm going over for the jam session.
Right. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS-FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Just another 2 minutes left here. Richard Herskowitz, Paul Wagner, Andy Herz, all involved with the Virginia Film Festival. Well, since you guys are opposite each other, none of the three of you can toss out The God of a Second Chance or Live from the Hook. I'd like you to toss out a movie or two that you're really interested in seeing over next weekend.
I'm dying to see Jesus Camp. A lot of people have told me about Jesus Camp. Subject is fascinating. That's the one that is probably tops on my list.
Paul?
I'm going back to see Tender Mercies, a film that I loved when it came out. But that's been a while. One of the great things about the film festival is, of course, Tender Mercies is out there on DVD, I presume. But this is a chance to see it on the big screen, not to mention with Robert Duvall. So you can't beat that combination. It was a film I treasured at the time, and I'm really eager to see sort of where I am with it now and to hear what Duvall has to say about it.
Now, Richard, I realize it's a little tougher spot for you because, I'm not asking you to
favor any.
Yeah, I mean, but
just
I realize
ones
that's
I point out that people are going to hear about in the next few months and going to wish they had seen them when they were at the film festival. One of them is Son of Man, which is an African retelling of the Gospels. Even The Fire Horse, a fantastic Canadian film about a Buddhist girl who tries out all these different religions. And Forgiven, which is a feature which is made by a Virginia-based filmmaker, actor, Paul Fitzgerald, his first feature. It was at Sundance and will be coming out shortly. Those are just some. I mentioned Before the Music Dies, too, before. That's another one.
All right. I want to thank all three of you for coming in today. Andy, I appreciate you getting up early on your post-music just to come in on Sunday morning. Paul, as always, thank you for coming back. Richard, you know what next year's theme's going to be?
No, I haven't told him yet.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Paul to tell me. From now on, it's all his.
All right. Thank you so much, folks. Richard, what's the phone number or the...
VAfilm.com is the website where you can get tickets. And actually, tickets go on sale tomorrow in person at the Regal Downtown Cinema box office all day. And 982-5277 is where you can order tickets.
And don't forget to keep listening to WNRN and win stuff for free. All right. Adios.
This has been been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at WNRN.RLC.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.